This morning, three bits of good news from Africa. First, according to the joint UN program on HIV/AIDS, Zimbabwe has become the first Southern African country to register a decline in the percentage of its population diagnosed with HIV. A review of recent epidemiological and behavioral data released by UNAIDS in December said the incidence of new HIV infections had also declined. The review, conducted by a team that included research staff from Britain's Imperial College, found that HIV among pregnant women declined from 26% in 2002 to 21% last year. Other data showed a similar trend. The findings confirm an earlier national survey carried out by UNAIDS, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, and several universities, and released in October. According to that study, the percentage of Zimbabweans between the ages of 15 and 49 infected with HIV dropped from 24.6 to 20.1% in the last 2 years. The latest review observed that, quote, a substantial increase in condom use with non-regular partners and an increase in faithfulness have contributed to the decline, end quote. A third series of studies in the eastern province of Manicaland from 1998 to 2000 and again from 2001 to 2003 confirmed the decline in HIV among both males and females between the ages of 15 and 24. The Manicaland studies showed that young Zimbabweans had delayed becoming sexually active, that promiscuity was on the decline, and that women with frequently changing partners were increasingly using condoms. UNAIDS epidemiologist Peter Guise pointed out that the HIV/AIDS epidemic in Zimbabwe was old compared to most other countries in the region, possibly dating back to the mid-1980s. That means Zimbabwe has had a longer period of time to respond to the crisis as compared to South Africa, where the epidemic began in the 1990s. Countries like Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo, where the epidemic began in the early 1980s, have also recorded a significant decline in HIV incidence. Guise said the new review's findings indicated that HIV/AIDS prevention programs directed at changing sexual behavior were responsible for the lower number of new cases. According to Guise, the Zimbabwean government's decision to decentralize its HIV/AIDS prevention program had also proven to be an effective strategy in curbing HIV incidence. Very early in the epidemic, the government was charging an AIDS levy, which helped fund HIV prevention programs at the district level. However, Guise cautions that there is still a lot of prevention work to be done. He also expresses concern over the impact on thousands of Zimbabweans displaced by the government's cleanup campaign, Operation Murambatsvina, which has disrupted HIV/AIDS prevention programs. The controversial campaign has left more than 700,000 people homeless. Here is a second piece of good news from Africa. As 2005 drew to an end, the African Protocol on the Rights of Women entered into force in 15 African countries. For the first time in international law, this groundbreaking interpretive addition to the African Charter on Human and People's Rights explicitly sets forth the reproductive right of women to medical abortion when pregnancy results from rape or incest, or when the continuation of pregnancy endangers the health or life of the mother. In another first, the protocol explicitly calls for the legal prohibition of female genital mutilation and prohibits the abuse of women in advertising and pornography. The protocol sets forth a broad range of economic and social welfare rights for women. The rights of particularly vulnerable groups of women, including widows, elderly women, disabled women, and women in distress, which includes poor women, women from marginalized population groups, and pregnant or nursing women in detention, are specifically recognized. Beginning in July 2003, a coalition of 19 national, regional, and international organizations called Solidarity for African Women's Rights collected signatures from across Africa by pen, email, online, and by text messaging, SMS, from people encouraging their governments to ratify the protocol. Ferozi Manji of FAHAMU, the member group that developed the technique, said, "To our knowledge, this is the first time that SMS technologies were used on a mass scale on the African continent in support of human rights." Gladys Mutukwa, of coalition member Women in Law and Development in Africa, added, quote, "There are 38 member states of the African Union that have not yet ratified the protocol. Our work will not end until they too show their commitment to women's rights in Africa and become party to the protocol." In the third and last story from Africa this week, at the end of December, UN peacekeepers packed up and pulled out of Sierra Leone. The UN mission, known as UNAMSIL, was the largest of its day with 17,500 members. The civil war in Sierra Leone, which lasted from 1991 to 2002, shocked the world with its brutality. Gangs of drugged fighters, many of them children, mutilated their victims. UN troops began arriving in 1999, but their way was fraught with difficulty. During a 10-day period between the end of April and early May in 2000, more than 700 UN peacekeepers were abducted by flip-flop-wearing rebels from the Revolutionary United Front, or RUF. And in August 2000, 11 British troops were taken hostage by a militia group calling itself the West Side Boys, prompting a sweeping rescue operation that all but wiped out the West Side Boys' fighters. Over the span of the five-year mission, UNAMSIL disarmed and demobilized over 72,000 combatants, 6,000 of whom were children, and collected and destroyed over 30,000 arms. UNAMSIL has also built a new police force. Currently, 9,200 new officers have been trained, and by February, the new force will match pre-war levels of 9,500 officers. Daudi Mwakawago, head of UNAMSIL, told the Integrated Regional Information Network, quote, "We were supposed to help the government extend its authority throughout the country. That has been achieved," he said. "There is not one pocket of territory you can say is a no-go area. The government is in total control over its territory," end quote. In the village of Goderich on the outskirts of the capital, Freetown, Captain Parvez Chowdhury of the 5th Battalion of Bangladeshi Peacekeepers said, quote, "We were worried there may be some incidents such as looting when we started pulling out, but no such thing has happened, even in remote places," he said, as his troops dismantled the temporary structure they erected 5 years ago. The civil war was financed by the rebels' sale of easily mined alluvial gems or blood diamonds. UNAMSIL has helped restore government control over the country's diamond mines. Training, employment of mine wardens, increased policing and patrols have enabled the government to increase its revenues from diamonds, which were $10 million U.S. in 2000, to $130 million U.S. in 2004. In Goderich, residents said they were sad to see the Bangladeshi peacekeepers, whom they have nicknamed the Banglas, leaving their villages. At a special ceremony, Goderich villagers gathered to bid farewell to their Bangla friends. Abdulama Mohammed Ba traveled from nearby Toke village, where he is the chief imam, to say his farewells. "They built 4 classrooms," Ba said, "supplied books at the mosque. Every week they came to the village and gave free medical care and supplied food for the children." Still, Sierra Leone has a long way to go. "You have the peace," Mwakawago says, "but it is elusive. People can go to sleep and wake up unmolested, but they do not know where their next meal will come from and what kind of meal they will get." "Only 50% of diamond operations are under government control," Mwakawago says. According to the World Bank, some 75% of Sierra Leoneans live on less than $2 a day, and 1 in 4 cannot afford a basic diet. Two-thirds of the population is illiterate, and unemployment hovers at 70%, with 2 million jobless young people. These include a large pool of ex-combatants who could take up arms again. One of the main problems for work-hungry youth is that there aren't enough companies setting up in Sierra Leone to create job opportunities. Victor D'Angelo, resident representative for the UN's development program, says, quote, "One of the most important challenges at this stage is to create the conditions for the private sector to feel confident in investing. The private sector is timid, and the impediments to investing many," end quote. Under a Security Council resolution, UNAMSIL Blue Helmets will be replaced by a modest 300-member UN Integrated Office in Sierra Leone, whose mission is to promote a culture of security and peace, guide the nation to free and fair elections in 2007, and provide technical support to a country that ranks second from the bottom in the UN's Human Development Index. Ibrahim Diallo, a tall, young, unemployed mechanic, says, "I am glad for the peace they brought to the country. Now we can walk everywhere. During the war, nobody could move where they wanted to." That's it for this Monday. This feature draws on material from One World, Erin, Plus News, Pambazooka News, and Equality Now. If you would like to suggest a story or comment about anything you hear on World Report, email Earthling, that's EARTHLING, at netidea.com. Put World Report in the subject line to make sure I don't mistake your message for spam. I'm Jim Terrell at Kootenai Co-op Radio. Thanks for listening.